For more information about Ancient Dragon Zen Gate and Tygon's teaching, please visit us at ancientdragon.org.
So basically all of the Buddha Dharma is an expression of the experience of just sitting, what we've just been doing, of just being present and upright and paying attention to what it's like to be present here this evening in this body and mind. Beyond our stories about who we are and what the world is and so forth. And yet, we also do things like bowing to express our appreciation to Buddha and chanting various texts. And we also have various visual dharma. So, initially in Buddhism, they didn't have many images. They were just images of the dharma wheel. And the Buddha is said to have turned the dharma wheel. And then images of Buddha's footprint. And then gradually there were images of Buddhas and Bodhisattvas. And as Buddhism grew and developed into the Bodhisattva practice that we do here, the enlightening being practice and practices that are aimed at universal liberation, there were more and more expressions of the Buddha Dharma. In some ways, we don't need any of them. And in our tradition, maybe for the very best students, the teacher never says anything to them. But practically speaking, for most of us, and as we're translating and developing the Dharma in this very different culture from the Asian cultures in which Buddhism grew, how do we express and grow the Dharma? So one of the ways that Buddhism has always expressed itself and the teaching of awakening has always expressed itself is through visual dharma. I don't know if the word art is actually appropriate because that has some other meaning. But, in pre-literate cultures and for most of Asian Buddhist history, for the first couple hundred years, there wasn't anything written down of the Buddhist teaching. And in many cultures, not everybody was literate, but people would go to temples and they would see images of the Buddha sitting upright. And that's enough to just look at the Buddha and see the calm and presence. And then, of course, many other unfoldings of visual dharma have appeared. So what I want to do tonight is talk about the visual expressions of Dharma in our Zendo, in our meditation hall. And maybe all of them just point to vast emptiness or complete suchness and immediacy of experience, but each of them in a way expresses something of what it means to just be present and upright in this body. So I'm going to go around the room and say a little bit. And actually, I could talk all night about each one of them. But I'll just, this is a little survey. So our newest addition to the Zendo behind Jeremy is an image of a lotus. Actually, three lotuses, and it's from a painting by a famous Japanese painter called Three Sages and Lotus. In a lotus, and I'm not sure if it's a detail of some larger picture, but actually there are three different lotuses in that image, and you need to get up closer to it to really look at it, but I'll mention it anyway, and actually when we do walking meditation, you might get a chance to look to see it more. But I want to say a little bit about what the lotus represents, because it's very important in terms of expressing the practice and development of awakening. And actually, it's kind of unusual that none of the images of Buddhas or Bodhisattvas in our Zendo don't have a lotus pedestal that they're sitting or standing on. So we have a lotus on the back wall. There are three lotuses. But lotus, first of all, is an image. The lotus grows out of the mud. And for all of us, we come to practice. We come to taking on spiritual practice through the mud of our own ancient twisted karma, greed, hate, and delusion, through personal causes and conditions and difficulties, we somehow find a way to be present, and a practice of being present, a physical practice, a yogic practice. The lotus grows out of the mud and then opens. And Gene Reeves, translator of the Lotus Sutra, was here last week. The Lotus Sutra's arguably the most important Buddhist scripture in East Asia. And as Gene was talking about it, literally it's the Dharma Flower Sutra, or the Dharma Flowering Sutra, that our practice is about, together as Sangha, as community, and each of us individually, and in our culture for Soto Zen, our tradition, and Buddhism generally, to flower and develop and grow and change. And so anyway, the Lotus Sutra is very important. So it's all, there's a lot, and I could keep going again all night talking about lotuses and the Lotus Sutra and the difference between different kinds of lotuses. And there are many stories in the Lotus Sutra that are very interesting and entertaining. But one of them is just that the Buddha is in some ways alive for a very, very, very long time. And how, what that means is that the Buddha is alive now, the Buddha who lived 2,500 years ago or so, more or less, in northeastern India, through our practice. We are keeping alive the way of awakening in Chicago here this evening. So that's just a tiny bit about that image behind Jeremy. So again, I want to go around the room and maybe there'll be time for questions and further discussion, but behind Mike is a scroll with calligraphy, a very common way of expressing things in Chinese and Japanese culture. This one came to us through Sato Sensei, who is actually a national living treasure in Japan. He lives in California. He was here a couple of years ago or so, maybe 3 years ago, and did that calligraphy right here in the Zendo as a demonstration talking about Japanese expressions of Dharma. And what it says, what it is, direct mind or straightforward mind, this is the dojo. Dojo is a word that some of you may know from martial arts, but literally way, place, or bodhi mandala in Sanskrit. Straightforward, direct mind is the place of awakening. So dojo means the place where one finds the way. So again, I could say a lot more about each of those characters and about how Chinese characters work in Chinese and Japanese culture. But anyway, the second one down is mind, which is important as we study mind, which is, of course, not separate from body. And in that character also means heart or spirit. The one, two after that, next to the last one, is the Tao, or Do in Japanese, the way. So we are here unfolding the way, allowing the way to flower. So direct mind, straightforward mind, that's the place of awakening. Behind Dawn is a painting that Kaz Tanahashi, an old friend of mine who has translated Dogen, and I've translated with him. He came out last year with a full translation of Dogen's Shobogenzo, True Dharma, High Treasury, which is a masterpiece of world spiritual literature and a huge book. But Kaz also is a peace activist and a world-renowned calligrapher. He's been here a couple of times doing calligraphy workshops. And for a long time, I've been wanting to have, I had in mind some kind of somewhat large landscape to put on that wall. I felt like we needed some outdoor scene. We don't have windows except these skylights behind me in the Zendo. So this is our window. And this particular painting is one of causes one brush, one stroke painting. So he's actually, one of the things he does, he does circles. Out front, there's a one stroke painting of literally the character one, which is just a horizontal line. But this one, obviously, it's a very large brush, and it went beyond this particular canvas. But this particular painting is called The Snow Within. And so I think it's very appropriate for us, especially in Chicago in the summer, and now in the new normal global heated summer, to remember the snow within, to remember our inner cool. And also in the winter, when there's snow outside, there's also snow within. So this is The Snow Within, and it actually is inspired by a short poem by Dogen. Dogen is the founder of Soto Zen, the branch of Buddhism that we follow here. We don't have to call it Soto or Zen, we could just say Buddhism, but anyway, this is the tradition we follow here. Dogen was a Japanese master in the 13th century who brought this tradition from China to Japan. And there's a poem, and actually when Kaz was here, he was talking about how he, amongst other things, first came to study Dogen many, many years ago. And he mentioned a poem that he came across, and I'll just paraphrase it, but one of Dogen's well-known poems, short poems. He says, "For years I thought I saw that snow covered the mountain." Actually, I should say that he founded a monastery, Eiheiji, in near the north coast of Japan, in the very remote mountains. He moved his whole community from the capital, the cultural capital of Kyoto, to Eiheiji, and it's a place where very severe weather, and they have like 10 feet of snow in the winter. It's a beautiful place. It's built up now more than when Dogen lived there. I was done ceremonies there. Anyway, so the poem goes, "For years I thought that snow covered the mountains. Now I see that snow is the mountain." So that poem inspired Kaz to start studying Dogen, and so it's reflected in this painting that we have in our Zendo. Going around the room again, this is one that's hard to see. You have to really get close and look at it, but you might want to do that sometime. This is the Bodhisattva Kanon, or Guanyin in Chinese. We chant sometimes the Kanzeon, the Bodhisattva of Compassion, whose name means to hear or observe the sounds of the world. So Bodhisattvas, in some ways, we're all doing Bodhisattva practice, even if this is your first time doing meditation tonight. This is, you're doing Bodhisattva practice. This is practice in which we see that, and we come to see through sitting, that we are deeply interconnected. We can't actually just practice for ourselves. Of course, you know, people come to practice because they have some problem or some sadness or loss or question, and it does help us individually to find a way to regularly stop, and settle, and face the wall, face the floor, face our lives, be present and upright. But this practice is also about compassion. We come to see that we can't be truly free, truly awake, unless others around us are too. So we practice not just for ourselves. And in fact, when we do Zazen and do this regularly, it changes how we are with people in the world. And it changes the people who see us without our trying to figure that out or how to do it. But part of that is expressed by this Bodhisattva of Compassion, whose name means to hear the suffering of the world or the sounds of the world. There are many different forms of this Bodhisattva. Some of them have 1,000 arms, literally, and with different implements in each hand and an eyeball in each hand to see from different perspectives and act skillfully to help beings. This particular image, and again, it's a little hard to see. This is a cast iron image that I got when I was living in Kyoto. An American fellow who lived in Nara had had a bunch of old pieces of things from temples. This one is 11-headed Kanon. So if you look closely sometime, you can see there's actually 11 heads around altogether. And the story about that is that this is one of the standard versions of this bodhisattva of compassion, that one time she saved all beings from hells, all the hells. And she looked back and saw that all the spaces in hell were being filled by other beings. And her head broke apart in grief. And then she did it again. And this happened 11 times. And finally, the 11th time, she was able to save all beings. And the top, usually on Kanon, you can tell, one of the ways to tell that bodhisattva is there's an image of Amida Buddha on the top head. So anyway, if you take a look at that, this also, this is a standing rather than sitting version, and she's holding a jar with nectar in it to, or ambrosia to help relieve the suffering of being. So that's a little bit about that image. The image over here is a longer story about. It's hard to tell the story briefly. But this is also the Bodhisattva of Compassion, a different version. And the story about that particular image, I got that when I was living in, practicing in, I spent a couple of years in Kyoto, the capital of Japan, and I did a practice period in a monastery in Kyushu. And part of that was we would go out on begging rounds, because all the food that we got was from what was given to us as we went around. And that's a whole other story talking about that. But anyway, and one of the, we would go a few times a month, once to the local village and a couple times a month to the big city. Kumamoto was the large city near. We were up in the mountains of this monastery, but we'd go down there and walk around doing this chant, holding out our begging bowl, and people would put money or food in it, and it's kind of like walking sesshin, because you're just walking and chanting all day, and you're wearing these straw sandals, and it takes a while to get used to how to walk on those. But anyway, they took us on a break, though, to this temple near Kumamoto, which at this point is inland a little bit. Kumamoto's on the coast. At the time, at Dogen's time, it was right on the coast, and it was, I guess, then a Shingon temple, a Vajrayana tantric temple. Now it's a Soto temple. So small temple. It's as small as our temple, but very, very old. Maybe smaller even than our temple. And there was no priest there, but there was an old couple who were the caretakers. And the story is that that's where Dogen landed when he came back from China in 1227. And the story about this image, and probably it's not historically true, but it's, but this image is attributed to Dogen, and it's an image of Kanon, and the story, which is lovely, and so I, you know, even though this may not actually be Dogen's handwriting, although it's claimed to be, and it may not have actually be Dogen's image, but the story is that he was coming back from China, and at that time it was difficult to travel from Japan to China. And there hadn't been anybody who'd done that for several hundred years. And then during Dogen's time, there were numbers of monks who did. It was a dangerous trip. Coming back, there were big waves. And it was a typhoon or something. And the ship was about, was going, looked like it was going to capsize. And Dogen was sitting on the deck, and he chanted the last verse, the verse closing of chapter 25 of the Lotus Sutra, devoted to the Bodhisattva of Compassion. It's a chant we do occasionally, the Universal Gateway of Kanzan Bodhisattva. So he chanted that, and eventually the turbulence of the sea calmed down, and he had a vision of, and this is another particular, sometimes there's 33 different forms of this bodhisattva in the Lotus Sutra. So this is all part, all of these images refer to aspects of our bodhisattva, you know, we could say myths or old stories, teaching stories. We don't have to take all of these literally. But anyway, the story is that this bodhisattva appeared on the water. And this particular image of Kannon is called one-leaf Kannon. So if you look later, you can see that there's Kannon sitting on a leaf on the ocean. And the story is that Dogen inscribed this image that he saw onto the deck of the boat. And when they landed at this temple that I was at, the priest there eventually took a rubbing of that, made an image of that. And in 1243, the year before Dogen, just in the year before Dogen, moved from Kyoto to Aheiji in the north, this priest went to Kyoto because Dogen was becoming well known by then. And Dogen is supposedly inscribed the poem, which is on the top, which says roughly one petal is the Tathagata, is the Buddha. Each flower is five petals. Each petal is one Buddha or Tathagata dedicated to carrying, and then there's the name Zenzai, which is Sudana in Sanskrit, which is a particular bodhisattva from the Flower Ornament Sutra, something about carrying him on his way. And then the last two lines are the date, 1243, and the last line says Shaman Dogen inscribed this. So it's supposed to be Dogen's writing. And probably it's not, actually. But I like the story anyway. So they gave us copies of this at this temple. So I had it framed, and now it's sitting in our Zendo. And, anyway, this is a story about calling on the spirit of compassion at dangerous times. And this response, as the Jewel Mary Samadhi we chanted, says, drumming and singing come up together. So this sense of calling on the bodhisattva. Now the bodhisattvas, bodhisattvas like Kannon and another one I'm going to get to, are in popular Asian Buddhism are considered spirits who are out there to help us, like we might call on saints in some Western religions. But also, it's clear they're understood as parts of us too. So to call on the bodhisattva of compassion in difficult situations is to remember compassion at such times. And it may not actually miraculously help us, despite what it says in the Universal Gateway of Kanzan Bodhisattva, but it can't hurt. So just to remember kindness when we're feeling some urgency is the spirit that's represented by that image. So again, I could say a lot more about it, but I won't. I'm going to say a little bit about what's on the altar and then open this for discussion. Again, each of these visual expressions of Dharma, is just pointing to emptiness. So we could actually take everything down. And there's some Zen teachers in America who don't have any images and no Buddhas. Toni Packer is probably the most notable. She won't mention the word Buddha, but she's a Zen teacher. Joko Beck was also somewhat like this. In our tradition, we welcome all the profusion of the flowers of Dharma visual expressions. So we have a Buddha at the center of our altar, and I'll come back and talk about him a little bit. But to my left, right there, and maybe you can't see it, Casey, but there's a standing image of Bodhidharma, who's the legendary founder of Chan in China. And there's a lot of stories about him, and he's a great legendary figure. And there's so many, tall tales about him that for quite a while, modern scholars thought he never really existed. In the last, 10 or 20 years, they're willing to admit that, yes, there was some guy named Bodhidharma. Some of the stories are clearly false, like, he said, well, I saw the cave in China where he sat for 9 years, supposedly, in the snow. There's lots of wonderful stories about him. Well, also one, this is the first story in the Zen Blue Cliff Records, one of the great Zen koan collections. He went to South China and was in the kingdom of a small kingdom, and the king there, Emperor Wu, was a very famous Buddhist patron and had built many temples and ordained many monks and arranged for many translations. And so, and all this, a lot of the sutras talk about all the merit that you get from doing that. And so the emperor said to Bodhidharma, "What merit have I gained by all of this?" And he said, "No merit." And the emperor said to Bodhidharma, what is the highest meaning of the sacred truth?" And Bodhidharma said, "Vast emptiness, nothing holy." And then he split. And the emperor was perplexed and asked his Buddhist minister, "Who was that guy?" And the minister said, "Oh, don't you know that was the Bodhisattva Guanyin of Avalokiteshvara, the same Bodhisattva of compassion, come to spread the Dharma in China." Now, historically, when Bodhidharma came to China and around the 400s, already there was very developed Buddhism in China, and Chinese Buddhism. But there were very fine Chinese Buddhist schools and translations and so forth, but Bodhidharma and early Chan or Zen emphasized not getting rid of the theory, but going beyond words and letters to bring it into experience. So that's the kind of tone and culture of Chan. Anyway, Bodhidharma is an image of that, and that particular statue that's on our altar, I went in 2007 on a tour of Buddhist temples in China, and one of the people on the tour was a fellow from my old sangha in the Bay Area, and he purchased that for our temple. That's from Kongshan Temple, empty gate, empty form temple, where Bodhidharma taught, and that's made from cypress wood, and it was there at that temple. So anyway, that's Bodhidharma, and he's on our altar. On the other side of the altar, the colorful doohickey thing there, came from Chinatown in Chicago, and it's an image of the Dragon Gate. So our temple is called Ancient Dragon Zen Gate. And do you all know the story of the Dragon Gate? Do you all know about Dragon Gates? No? Okay, good, so I can tell the story. So the story is an ancient Chinese story that there is in, you know, one of these deep rivers in China, a number of very huge rivers, there's a gate, and any fish that comes to that gate, if they swim through it, they become a dragon. And you can see, if you look at that later, when you come around afterwards, you can see that there's this gate, and there's a fish kind of hanging out by the gate, you know, not sure. And maybe that's the best thing, just to be a fish by the gate, by the dragon gate. But also you'll see that there's a fish that's gone through the gate and that's ready to rise up as a dragon above the gate. So, we have this temple named Ancient Dragon Zen Gate. I can't prove it scientifically, but I kind of think there's a dragon gate in Lake Michigan too. So anyway, here we are. So there's the Buddha, and then there's the littler image in front of the Buddha, which Will and Mike and Jeremy probably can't see, but that's another different Bodhisattva, Manjushri. So on the sides we have the Bodhisattva of compassion and kindness. This is the Bodhisattva of wisdom. And traditionally in Zen temples, Manjushri sits at the center of zendos, of meditation halls, to represent wisdom, to represent seeing through. So this image of Manjushri, you can look at it later, is sitting on a lion, and that's very traditional. Often Manjushri sits on a lion to represent kind of the fierceness of Zen wisdom. And sometimes he carries a sword, to cut through delusion. In this case, he carries a teaching scepter like this to represent the teaching. And Manjushri himself is very calm and youthful, and yet represents wisdom which in Buddhism and in Bodhisattva way means insight into emptiness, or we could say into oneness, into the ways in which we are all the same, or all the, or there's great commonality. Whereas the Bodhisattva of compassion represents appreciating the diversity and all the particular differences and acting skillfully to help different kinds of being. Manjushri represents just one. So anyway, that's the Bodhisattva of insight or wisdom. And he is, and it's traditional for him to be in the center of the altar. This Zendo is also a Buddha hall because we do our ceremonies, as you just saw here. And that's the Buddha. And the platform he's sitting on is called a Sumeru platform. Often Buddhas sit on a lotus pedestal. This pedestal, when my teacher was here, he thought that Buddha should be higher. So he suggested a Sumeru pedestal, which Mount Sumeru is, according to Buddhist myth, maybe connected with Mount Kailash in Tibet, but said to be the center, the axial center of just not just the world, but the universe. And of course, we know that Earth is no longer is not the center of the universe. But you know, they didn't know that back then. Anyway, so he's sitting up on he's the center of the temple, really. And that's Shakyamuni on the top there. Although my friend Gene Reeves, when he was here, was saying, well, maybe it really looks like Amida. But we had an eye-opening ceremony and dedication for this as Shakyamuni Buddha. So it's Shakyamuni Buddha. Anyway, there's much more I could say about each of those things, and we're almost out of time. We have a little bit of time before tea and cookies. So does anybody have any questions or comments about visual dharma in general or about any of the particular things I've talked about tonight? Please feel free. Jeremy,
yeah, okay.
Pull your next one.
Okay. So you said at the beginning of your Dharma talk that kind of like I think what your Dharma number just is before is the statue is kind of like something we can imitate and sit up. Mm-hmm. Like Buddha.
Yeah.
I was hoping you would comment on this comment I had heard during your Dharma talk on Gyochi. I'll be paraphrasing the whole thing, but essentially he said that somebody had seen the Buddha sitting, mm-hmm. made a statue, and he's basically saying that the sitting, the posture came from a very natural evolution of just sitting, that kind of thing, but at the same time our bodies are not all like that, and to find a seat of joyful ease, we need to find our own posture.
Absolutely.
Imitating.
So it's not that you had, so, you know, we have a whole tradition here. It's not that we're trying, that we can't be Japanese or Chinese or you know, Indian. We're, as Americans, whether we're Indian American or Japanese American or Chinese American, doesn't matter. We have to find a new way to express this that makes sense for us in our culture, in our lives, in our causes and conditions. So it's not, so the tradition is not something that you kind of try to copy exactly. It can't be done. But it's a guideline. And practically speaking, yes, so this Buddha is sitting in full lotus. And I don't know if anybody here is sitting in full lotus. I used to once upon a time, can't anymore. And it's not even necessary to sit cross-legged. It's fine to sit kneeling, like Daniel's doing. It's fine to sit in a chair, and people do that here. There are many ways. The point is, though, that what he demonstrates is this yogic position of upright and relaxed. And it's true that it takes a while to find your own seat, you know, depending on how high or how hard the cushion is, how far back or forward you sit. It takes a while to find your position of what's sometimes called royal ease. If you do a longer sitting, it's advisable to change position sometimes during that. So the point is, though, that this is one model of upright sitting. And so we find our way of copying how the Buddha sits. There's a statue. I myself came to Buddhism not solely, but in very large part, through seeing Buddha images. And there's a statue of Jizo in Kyoto that I love. Jizo is a different bodhisattva who protects children and goes and particularly protects people and beings in hell. We have an image of Jizo standing, a large painting in the kitchen of Jizo, and we have two images of Jizo out front here, the earth womb bodhisattva. But there's this one statue at this temple in Kyoto that I really love because it kind of taught me how to breathe. Just seeing this bodhisattva sitting cross-legged. There's something about that's by a great sculptor named Unke, who lived at the same time as Dogen. Anyway, I can go on about that. But anyway, we have some model of what it's like to be present and upright through these images of Buddhas and bodhisattvas. Paul, you had a comment or question?
Mm-hmm. At the start of your talk, you first used the word art, and then you changed it to visual dharma.
Mm-hmm.
I was wondering where visual dharma starts and stops, and where you would say visual art starts and stops, or what is the difference? Or?
Well, art as a kind of business is not what I'm talking about. You know, I'm not talking about formal standards of art. You know, I actually, Zazen, as I say very often, Zazen is about supporting your own creative artistic expressions in the world. Zazen is about connecting in a very deep way with the source of creativity. So, it's not that I'm against art at all, but I wanted to use the word visual dharma because it's not merely, paintings or pictures or art. Artistic pieces, these are Dharma expressions. But of course, art and music and poetry and all kinds of creative expressions are part of expressing this awareness that we connect with in Zazen and can be helpful for others to find that for themselves. And so, the Bodhisattva Way is about inspiring others to help them find their own way to enter into the path of awakening. And art can be a wonderful part of that. Time for maybe one more comment or question. Ben.
I have to ask, why did Jane Reeves think that it was a Amida Buddha?
Well, technically, it's hard. I'm not sure. Technically, one way that Amida Buddha, one of the differences is that Amida Buddha sits like this with this mudra, and it's really hard to tell. It might be that mudra that this Buddha has. And Shakyamuni often is shown like this, with his fingers touching the ground to witness. So the story about that is that the when the Buddha was sitting up all night to become the Buddha under the Bodhi tree, the spirit of Mara, or temptation, said, "Well, who are you to be the Buddha?" And he just touched the ground, and the earth goddess or the earth witness, "Oh yeah, this is the Buddha." I think the image of Shakyamuni that's on the altar in the kitchen is like that, touching the ground. So, but Buddha is Buddha. It's okay if it's in the Buddha. Any last burning? Yes, Daniel.
What's the name of the book that you mentioned earlier in the context of the piece over there, the writing? And you said it was the greatest work, or maybe it was in the context perhaps of the.
Shobo Genzo, Dogen's True Dharma Eye Treasury, which has 95 different essays in it. So several of which I've translated, but Yeah, so Dogen is the, Ehei Dogen is the 13th century founder of this branch of Zen, and so we have a painting and some calligraphy supposedly by him over there, and this is a painting inspired by him.